It's another one. I got that juice, juice. New AP. She got that juice, juice. She got that squeeze. She got that wet, wet. I'm on them skis. I got that drip, drip. I'm overseas. D-R-I.
You know, right after Aaron Rodgers said he was gonna be returning to the Packers, I immediately thought of my brother. Before Nick passed away, we talked a lot about, you know, was Aaron's time coming to an end? We don't know if that time meant, you know, his time as a Packer or just his football career. We bonded over how Aaron had touched our lives, both of ours. He has made every Sunday watching the Packers such an absolute pleasure. You got to think about this from my standpoint. Like, since I've been growing up watching the Packers, I've only watched Aaron Rodgers in a Packer uniform. I don't remember when Brett Favre was on the Packers. I was too young at that time. And every single time I've watched Aaron Rodgers in a Packer uniform on Sundays, he has just absolutely mesmerized me with his talent, his swagger, his clutchness, just this aura about him is just so cool. And me and Nick would talk and just say, like, we really don't want to see him go, but man, these things just don't last forever. You don't see quarterbacks staying, you don't often see quarterbacks staying with the same team for as long as Aaron has. But we didn't want to see it end. And now, we're probably not going to, because Aaron Rodgers signed a 3-year contract extension that almost certainly means that he will be retiring as a Green Bay Packer. I'm being as serious as possible when I say this. There is just a whirlwind of emotions going through my head when I found that out. Like, I really, after the 49er game, and I watched Aaron walk off the field, it almost felt like this was really it. And I think that's what Nick thought too. And I just really, really, really didn't want to believe that he was gonna be leaving, but I felt like I had to believe it. I just really felt like, man, this time has come. Like, Aaron Rodgers is gone, and we are gonna be going into a deep and dark abyss of Green Bay Packer football. But then, past couple weeks, a lot of things happened. Brian Gutekunst made some great contract moves. He had to cut Za'Darius Smith, which honestly is the right move. It saves us a lot of cap room, and we had a great defense last year even without him. And cut Billy Turner, restructured some deals, and Aaron Rodgers is coming back. Now, we don't know about Devontae yet. That still remains to be seen, but man, the fact that I get to see C12 most likely retire as a Packer is just so sweet. I don't even care. Like, I don't even care that we didn't even make it to the Super Bowl this year. He's back, and when Aaron Rodgers is under center for your football team, you automatically always have a chance. And to me, that's really all I can ask for, because I know there are a lot of fans in a much worse situation than I am. So, Aaron, thank you. Nick, I know you're watching. I know after you saw those news, I know you went absolutely crazy and realized that, you know, your favorite player, my favorite player, our favorite player will be staying home in Green Bay where he belongs. Now, seriousness aside, we gotta really break this down. Where are the Packers going to be from here? Well, let's think about this. So, Aaron Rodgers' contract basically is structured like this. His cap hit next year when our Super Bowl window is at its peak height, peak width, if you will. Aaron's cap hit is very, very low. It's at $28 million. And then you look at all the other contracts. Jair's still on his rookie deal. He doesn't have to be paid yet. Heck, if we give him an extension, his cap hit will still be saving us money. The Preston Smith contract saves us money in the 2022 season. Like, this coming year is the year for the Packers to win a Super Bowl. I'm not saying they can't in years to come with Aaron Rodgers and while he's on his new deal. But if I had to pick a season where the Packers, I think, can win a Super Bowl, it's this year. Now, it's wishful thinking, obviously, and I've already said in previous podcasts, after the 49er loss, I really cannot get excited for any Packer regular season games until they make it to the Super Bowl. Because the year before that, they went 13-4, thought they were winning the Super Bowl, lost first round. The year before that, 13-3, thought they were the best team in the NFL, lost championship round. I can't really get excited because I know they will just find a way to rip my heart to shreds in the playoffs. But if I'm thinking about this as an objective NFL football fan, you got, basically, now that Javondre Campbell is back, you basically got the same defense you had last year. Think about it. Yes, we cut Za'Darius Smith, but Za'Darius Smith was out the entire season last year. You have Rasul probably coming back. Eric Stokes on one side, he is getting better every single day. You still have a top two cornerback in the NFL on the other side, and Jair Alexander, who I hope we get him an extension, which would lock him up for the next 4 years. That would be amazing. And then still got two amazing safeties in the back end. Then you got Devondre Campbell, an all-pro linebacker who is with you for at least the next 3 years. This defense is intact. The Packers, once they saw this cap situation, the NFL world and the Packers fan base all thought maybe this is probably it. But Brian Gutekunst worked his magic, and you look at the roster, the defense is intact, and the offense, hopefully Davante Adams is going to be out there come week one, and I really think he will be. Hopefully we can get a deal done with him. I want all these deals to happen, and maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part, but I really, really think that's going to happen. You still got your backfield with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. You still have a great O-line that is going to have Dave Bakhtiari in the entire season. Elton Jenkins will be back in the middle of the season. You cut Billy Turner, but the Packers always draft offensive linemen well. They'll probably pick up a guy in the third or second round that will be a first-week starter. And if you don't draft a guy that can be a first-week starter, you got Yash Nishman to play right tackle, who played incredibly well last year. I love the look of this team. It's just whether one guy can put it together and play his best games when it counts. And that's Aaron Rodgers. And I know I just went on a rampage saying how happy I am that he's staying, and I brought my brother into it and made it all emotional for you guys, but I'm being serious. When it comes playoff time, really all the main thing it comes down to. Now all the other chess pieces have to be working too. When it comes down to is your MVP quarterback playing his best when his best is required. And Aaron Rodgers has not done that in the past couple of years in the playoffs. As tough as that is for me to admit. In fact, in the Buccaneers game, he didn't play his best football, and it is required, so I'm not going to give him a pass for that. But he played pretty good, and he still couldn't win the game. All the chess pieces have to work out. Football is just a giant chessboard. You have to remember that. I don't know what it is with these fucking chess analogies, but whatever. Number 12's got to get it done. And I think he can, and I think he can possibly win another MVP this year. But it all comes down to the playoffs and how he does there. That is really what I say about the Packers. And not just, and I guess not even just 12. The whole team, like, when you look at all the Packers' playoff losses, you can point to a player, a unit that completely sold the game. Every single one, you can point to a unit, a player that just played their worst game of the season for no reason. Now, the Packers special teams, we all know the reason. But they were playing bad the entire year. But they still are a unit that failed. I am not done holding hope for the Packers. I mean, we were in cap hell. Cap hell. $40 million over the cap, or whatever it was. And look at us now. We're basically even. and we got a great roster. Let's go win a fucking Super Bowl. That's all it comes down to. You got your quarterback. Hopefully you have your all-pro wide receiver. You got a great backfield. You got a great offensive line. You got the same defense you had last year. You have a GM that is known to be great at drafting quality pieces. You got a new special teams coach, for crying out loud, that you're paying, what, $6 million. Go win a Super Bowl. That is all I ask. Or at least get to one. But please, if you get to one, please, for the love of God, win that bitch. And that is all I have to say on the matter of the Green Bay Packers at the moment. I will see you in the next segment. Well, now I got to talk about this. Tom Brady, after a fucking month, decided, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to come back. Okay, a lot to unpack there. So, Tom Brady, let's picture this, ladies and gentlemen. So, Tom Brady says, you know what? I think my time's up. I think it's time that I spend more time with the kids. I spend more time with Giselle. I spend more time at home. Just being a dad. So, he goes home. And he realizes his family sucks. He's got one kid to help with homework over there. He's got to take another kid to practice over there. He's got to wipe another kid's ass over there. And then he's got his wife that's saying, you know, Tom, do this, Tom, do that. And then at night, he goes home exhausted, and he's like, wow. He's in bed, and he's like, wow, being a dad sucks. And now Tom just said, you know what, fuck it. I can go back to the NFL if I want. It's not like I don't have anything left in the tank. I almost won MVP last year. I was surprised. I heard all the reports, but I was surprised that Tom Brady said he wanted to retire, because really, why? Why would he? He's on a great team. He's still playing incredible football. And nobody in the NFL has loved the game, has put more into the NFL than Tom Brady has. Why stop now? He's already said he wants to play until he's 50. Why stop at 44? Play until you're dead. That may be what he's going to... That's probably what he's going to do. He's going to play until someone says, you know what, I've had enough of Tom Brady, and they go find a perch spot up in the Buccaneers Stadium, go up top, and they snipe him, and they kill Tom Brady. That's the only way he's retiring. By death. Tom Brady... People say father time is undefeated. Here's what I don't get. Peyton Manning probably put in the same amount of work that Tom Brady did. I mean, those guys both lived and breathed football. And for some reason, one, at the age of, I think, 38 or 39 when he retired, looked like he couldn't even throw a football more than 10 yards, Peyton Manning. Hell, look at Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger is about 38. What, he's getting close to 40 or whatever. He looked like he can throw a football 20 yards. Drew Brees at the end of his career. All three of those guys, by the time they didn't even get to 40. Drew Brees got to 40. Ben Roethlisberger and Peyton Manning did not get to 40. Drew Brees barely got to 40, and those three looked like they were completely shot. Tom Brady is 44 and is still a top 5 quarterback in the NFL. When will he retire? I don't know. That's why I should never have believed him when he said he was going to retire in February. Why? He loves football. That man cannot live without football. He is still a very good football player. He's still on a very good team with a very good roster, very good organization, a very good coach. Why would he retire, and when will it happen? I do not know. Because, like, people used to say, oh, one day he'll have to retire because Giselle is just going to be like, hey, if you don't retire, I'm going to divorce you. Well, look at this. Tom Brady basically told her he was retiring, and then after a month said, no, I don't want to live with you anymore. I still want to play football. I don't want to be around the kids this much. I don't want to be around the families this much. And she's still not divorcing him. She doesn't. Like, apparently, she doesn't sound that pissed about him playing more football. So Giselle, I guess, doesn't care about him playing a lot of football. When's it going to end? When is this nightmare of Tom Brady being in the National Football League and standing on that fucking Super Bowl podium at the end of every other year, when will it end? It is an endless cycle of misery watching that man play football and still play it at an incredibly high level, and he's going on 45 years old in August. 45! I mean, I've seen people in their mid-40s play football. They're kickers. Adam Vinatieri played those mid-40s, and when he got to 44, couldn't kick the ball 40 yards. Tom Brady is going to be 45 and can still throw a football 60 yards and still has one of the most accurate, strongest arms in the NFL. In fact, his arm is better than it was in New England. At least it looks like it. Because I swear to God, when I watched Tom Brady in a Tampa Bay uniform and when I watched him in a New England uniform, Tampa Bay Tom Brady has a better arm. Now, you know, Patriots Tom Brady, maybe he was a little more accurate. Maybe he had as good of an arm as Tom Brady does in Tampa, but he didn't, you know, push it down the field that much because that's not the McDaniels offense. But either way, he's still playing incredible football, and he's going to be 45. I don't know when he's going to retire. In fact, I don't think he will. What we thought could stop him, which was Giselle, apparently not. What we thought could stop him was maybe he missed his kids too much. Apparently not, because he certainly doesn't miss them. Oh, gosh, that is just... When I saw that, I was just, you gotta be kidding me. Honestly, the tweet looked fake. Like, it looked so, like, played out and cheesy. I was like, that's not something Tom Brady posts. He just posted on his Twitter, like, I'm back, and that's it. But he's back, folks. And now, the NFC just got a lot more interesting. And with that, I will see you in the next segment. By the way, in the last segment, I will be interviewing Chevalier Emery. He was on in the beginning of the year before the basketball season started. And now, look at him now. Him and the Nina Rockets are en route to the Kohl Center to compete for a state title as a Nina student and as a friend of just about everybody on that team. It's just what a time to be a Rocket right now, guys. What a time. So I will be interviewing Chevalier. But just want to let you know on that. Don't really have much else to say on the matter. See you in the next segment. All right, time to talk a little NBA. So the NBA playoffs are going to be very interesting. Currently, the standings look like this: first seed Heat, second seed Bucks, third seed Sixers, fourth seed Bulls, fifth seed Celtics, sixth seed Cavaliers, 7 seed Raptors, 8 seed Nets. We all know the Nets, that will be changing eventually. And then in the Western Conference, 1 seed Suns, 2 seed Grizzlies, 3 seed Warriors, 4 seed Jazz, 5 seed Mavericks, 6 seed Nuggets, 7 seed Timberwolves, 8 seed Clippers. I didn't really talk about the play-ins, but if the play-ins happened, 9 seed Hawks will play the 10 seed Hornets, and then the Wizards Knicks, and then the 9 seed Lakers will play the 10 seed Pelicans, and then the Blazers and the Spurs round that out. So, as I look at those standings, my main contenders I see, and this includes both conferences, I'd say the Suns and the Warriors are the main contenders in the West. Maybe the Mavericks. I really love Luka this year, and I think the way that roster looks with Spencer Dinwiddie, there's a lot of scoring in that roster, but unfortunately, they don't really have a great presence down low after they lost Kristaps, who wasn't even that good of a presence down low anyways. And then, as I look in the Eastern Conference, man, there's a lot to like. I mean, the Heat, I wouldn't say I completely trust them, because I don't like Jimmy Butler being your number one, you know, scoring threat, basically your number one player. I feel like he's a better two. But they're still a tough team that made the NBA Finals not too long ago, so can't really count them out. I love the Bucks, obviously. The Sixers, obviously, the last time I uploaded a podcast, it was before the Harden trade with Ben Simmons. I love the Sixers. They've had a couple rough stretches the past few games, but when I watch Embiid and Harden work together, that duo is nuts. James Harden has the best vision in the NBA. No, that guy, I honestly think he has eyes on the back of his head. If you give him a pick, and you got Tyrese Maxey back cutting, Joel Embiid coming off the pick and rolling, and then you got guys like Matisse Thybulle playing defense, playing an insane defense, and then Tobias Harris on the perimeter just shooting threes, and, you know, hitting his jump shots, which he's well known for doing. The Sixers are a scary team. I mean, when you have James Harden actually wanting to play for a team, unlike what he did in Brooklyn, he's a scary player. So I love the Sixers. The Bulls, I'm kind of indifferent on them. Again, LaVine and DeRozan can score, but they're not really well known, you know, playoff performers, I wouldn't say. So yeah, the Bulls, you know, they're there. Celtics, I love the way Jason Tatum is playing. I like that roster. I'd say they're a legit contender. Cavs, just a little young. You know, Evan Mobley and Darius Garland, they're good players, and I think they'll be really good in the coming years. But right now, I just think they're a little too young. Raptors, not really enough scoring. And then the Nets, with Ben Simmons, yes, they are absolutely a contender. So, if you ask me, as I am a Wisconsin sports fan, how do I think the Bucks stack up against these teams? Well, if you look at the East here, the Heat are obviously a tough matchup just because they play such good defense on Giannis. But I think even if Giannis does get a little shut down on there, Chris Middleton has always had his way with the Heat. He can score at will against them. I don't think there's anybody on that team that can guard him. If Jimmy Butler, of course, did guard him, then you got Drew Holiday going up against, you know, he's facilitating the offense. He's able to, you know, create shots for anyone on the floor. And basically the thing about the Heat, I think they can play tremendous defense, but I don't think they're going to be able to score with the Bucks. So I think there would be a lot of low scoring games in that series with the Bucks coming out on top. And you got to remember, last year the Bucks absolutely wiped the floor with the Heat, and I know they got Kyle Lowry now, but it's not like he's making a huge difference for them. Not making a huge difference, I think, in the playoffs. Kyle Lowry is a great, you know, three player, and I don't think that brings the Heat over the top. The Heat need a number one guy, a guy that can score at will anytime he gets the ball. The Sixers, so yeah, I think this has a potential to be a conference matchup between the Bucks and the Sixers. And man, I really can't pick these games right now. I just think that the Sixers and the Nets are the two teams that I'm most scared about. The Celtics, the thing about the way the East is stacked up, in the middle, there are teams that I think would match up well against the Bucks. Like, for example, the Celtics. I think the Celtics would match up well. The Sixers, I mean, they would have to play either the Bulls or the Celtics if the playoffs ended today. Now, I don't think they will, because I think the Heat are going to keep, I think the Nets are going to slowly continue to win games, and they'll be around the 4-5 seed. But yeah, in the middle, like, one really good team, like a team that, you know, I think the Bucks could definitely lose to, whether it's the Celtics or the Nets or the Bulls, hell, maybe even the Sixers, one of those teams is going to be out before the conference championship. That's why I love that's why I love where the Bucks are at the 2 seed. So, and then the Western Conference, yeah, I don't know if I trust the Grizzlies yet. John Morant has not played enough big playoff games. The Suns have proven themselves this year, and when Chris Paul gets back up and healthy, that team is scary. The Warriors, if Klay Thompson can start to find his groove, and hell, even Steph Curry started out incredibly hot, but in the past 2 months, hasn't been the same player, and has dipped in the MVP rankings. So if Steph Curry can find his groove, and then if Klay can eventually find his groove, because Klay's been pretty bad since he's come back from that injury that he's had, I think they're, again, one of those teams that, you know, reminds me of the 2016 team. It's the same roster. You got Draymond, who's coming back in the next week or so. And then you got Klay, as long as he can, you know, find his groove. And then the Jazz, I just never really trust the Jazz when they really have one pure scorer in Donovan Mitchell. The Nuggets I like, but it really all depends on when Jamal Murray can come back, and then after that, it's really not worth talking about. The Lakers are terrible. So, yeah, that's just me kind of looking at the NBA standings right now, where I think the Bucks stack up. I think the Bucks have a championship roster, but the East is a gauntlet. You got three, maybe four teams that the Bucks could definitely lose to. The Nets and the Sixers, obviously, and then the Heat, because the Heat have shown that they can stop Giannis. And then, hell, you might throw the Celtics in there if Jason Tatum keeps this up. All right, next segment, interview with Chevalier Emery. Should be a really good one. I'm very excited for the Rockets, and I think they can win a state title. We'll see you next segment.
All right, Chev, you're back, reoccurring guest. You are now a state title contender. How's it feel?
I mean, it feels great. Great to be in this position. Honored, kind of a kid's dream. So I'm really excited to get down there.
Yeah, so that was kind of my first question. So, like, you're essentially living out a childhood dream, playing at the Kohl Center. I feel like that's something that every child basketball player always dreams of. They're playing in Wisconsin. How are you feeling right now just going into it?
I mean, like, you always dream of that as a kid. Just be like, oh, I want to go down here. Especially when, like, you went to the state tournament, maybe, like, your high school, like, high school friends or whatever. You'd always go down and watch great games, and now you're kind of, like, a part of those great games. So it's really so surreal. Yeah, I think it'll really hit me, like, when we're driving down or when we, like, enter the building and stuff like that.
Yeah. So is that what you expected from this team all along?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I knew we had a great team, and I knew the talent that we had even during the summer when we'd go out of state and we'd compete and we'd be blowing teams out. So I knew that we were going to be really good, and that was nothing else but the expectation to get to state.
Yeah, so the last time you were on, we were talking about Cal being out, and you said that you needed, like, we needed, like, big contributions from other players on the team not named you or CT. So can you talk about how big the contributions have been from Matt, JJ, Eli, and Corso? Because all four of those guys are all conference players.
Right. You know, I think a lot of those guys, like, kind of, like, shocked a lot of people. Like, I'll start with JJ. I mean, JJ kind of was, like, a late bloomer, and everyone's starting to realize that. And he's a great player. I mean, there was a game I was out this year, and he had, I think it was, like, 29, 11, and 8. So, you know,
yeah.
And that just kind of shows, like, the diversity and, like, the difference in our team. Like, we have players that can do great things and do crazy type things any type of game, you know. And especially with JJ, I mean, he's a walking double-double. So, like, he contributes a lot of things to us that, you know, that people may not realize. And then, like, Brady, sharpshooter who's young, who has balls, man. I mean, he's taking some shots. I'll look at him like, what are you doing? And then, like, he'll make it. And, like, he just – it looks normal to him. So, you know, he's so young, yet he's so talented. And sky's really the limit for that kid. Like, I'm really interested in that kid.
Yeah. What about Matt, though? Because Matt's such an interesting player. He's like
– Right.
He's like he's the ultimate glue guy. Like, right. How important is it to have a guy like him on your team?
I mean, Matt's the football player. I mean, Matt's the kid that gets on the floor, plays great defense, does all those little things that you need in someone to do. And all the players around us, you know, me, CT, JJ, Brady, and even Eli sometimes, and Juke, like, we're all, like, we can put the ball in the hole, you know? And mm-hmm. I feel like for him, he's like the guy, like, I don't need to put the ball in the hole. I'll just play defense, be scrappy, you know? And that's just, like, kind of the energy he brings, and he brings great energy. He's just an ultimate competitor at the end of the day. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I've never seen him compete more with anybody. Like, he always competes with the best player at all times.
Yeah, I mean, me and Victor, when we're watching the games, like, we'll be watching Matt, like, literally just fly onto the ground and just try to get the ball. That's just stuff that you really can't teach. That's just toughness.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ice, you hit one of the craziest shots I've ever seen in my entire life. You, in that gym, in that environment, unless, of course, you win a state title, was that shot against Kimberly the highlight of your basketball career?
It easily has to be. I mean, versus who it was at the time, what the circumstances, when it was win or go home. I mean, the place erupted. Like, it was just, honestly, like, I still, like, I feel like it's kind of a dream, you know? Like, everything that was going on, like, my phone kind of exploded a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it was all over social media and stuff like that. I saw, like, on everybody's story, like, when I really tell you, like, I really felt like I was living in a dream. Like, that's, like, the dream of a kid, you know? Like, oh, like, you hit a fadeaway shot in the corner to win the game, send somebody home. Like, it was just so surreal to me.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of reposts, like, all hail King Emery, stuff like right. that. Himery, I mean, that was your night, man. So,
right.
You're playing Racine Case to start it off. Anything stand out to you when you watch them on film or anything like that?
You know, they're athletic, really super athletic, get up and down team really fast. So, and they're actually really well coached. I mean, obviously they're a good team. They got here, you know, just like us, they had to go through stuff. So they got here, you know, I'm really excited to play them, kind of a different team for us, you know, So I'm really excited to play this game.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of said that about Racine Case. Like, they're just not a team that you've ever played, at least this year. Like, that's they're not really FBA basketball. They, like, all of them can just hoop and play great isolation basketball. That's not really – back in the FBA, it's all, you know, team stuff that Rubbus has to deal with. Now it's just a whole different beast.
Right.
So, but I think a lot of people, when they look at, you know, who's in the state title game and who potentially can match up, everyone's looking at you guys versus Menominee Falls. Everyone thinks that, like, you guys are just going to win the first game, which obviously no first game is guaranteed. But let's say you do run into Seth Trimble and Steve Clay in Menominee Falls. Just tell me, like, what will it take to stop a guy that is going to North Carolina and one of the best players in arguably the best, probably the best player in the state?
You know, we got to play fundamental defense. We just got to play our game, you know. Our coaching staff's a great coaching staff. You know, they're going to figure out a game plan, whatever that is, and we just got to execute it. And we got to trust in our guys. And, I, you know, personally, that's just a challenge for me. I mean, obviously it's going to be a guard-on-guard matchup. You know, he's going to UNC. You know, I'm the low-major Division I player. So, you know, for me, I can't wait for that matchup. I mean, that's a matchup, obviously, I want, you know, and I feel like it's going to be a great matchup as well. I feel like I'm going to put a lot of people on notice with that matchup, and I hope I do. And I hope we just come out with a win.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Chev, you guys leave for Madison tomorrow. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there every single game, and I cannot wait. As a NINA student, this is just, you know, this is something that I haven't experienced. Like, freshman year, I was just a freshman. Now I'm a senior watching all my friends, you know, compete for a state title.
Right.
And I want to thank you for that. You're a unanimous first team all conference player, and you know you're the biggest part of this team's success. So let's just keep it going on Friday, and let's go get that ring.
Thank you, thank you.
All right, see you later.
See ya. Thirsty,
thirsty, trying to choose. I mean, I know I'm critical. My nitty bag, my kitty boots. I got the juice. I got the juice.
Geno, Chatham's on. Foolies glad I'm on. Even my haters kinda glad I'm on. Rest in peace to my